News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Wrapping up this section of the Triple Dipper, choosing choice, that school choice, if you will. Choosing school choice. Well, so just in the last few minutes here, let me just say this. You heard about Arizona signing in the most expansive, most incredible piece of school choice legislation in the nation. And it is. I mean, can you imagine? What if somebody told you, hey, mom, dad, hey, legal guardian, you want to send your child to a better school than the one you think your child is in now, and you see it right down the road, you go right ahead. Here's $6,500 a year towards that tuition, towards those expenses, towards whatever it takes for that to happen. That's big doings, y'all. But the fight is still on. And a moment ago, Charlotte Meadows, here on the show with us, she alluded to the fact that a judge in West Virginia just blocked a school choice program from taking effect there. Now, she was a she's a Democrat, and she's also a state judge. So it was in state circuit court. She shot it down in relation to a belief on her part, an understanding or interpretation, if you will, that it violated the state constitution. So she found it unconstitutional under state law. So she shot down a scholarship program offering public money for private education, calling it unconstitutional. After a hearing that lasted a little over an hour, Kanawha Circuit Judge Joanna Tabbitt on Wednesday ruled the Hope Scholarship Program, which already has 3,000 students enrolled in it, by the way, was in some form unconstitutional. She said that it violates state constitution's duty to provide for a thorough and efficient system of free schools. Okay, let me point out something. What she did there was she interpreted the word school to mean an actual school as opposed to a free school, meaning a free education. So if you provide the money to the parents under a scholarship program to go elsewhere, they're still getting the education from the state. But if the judge wants to interpret the state constitution's archaic language of a thorough and efficient system of free schools as meaning school buildings, like you have to go to that one that you're assigned to, well, okay. Well, it's going to be appealed, I can just tell you. But the Corey DeAngelis, who's been on this show before, a national advocate from the American Federation for Children, Corey DeAngelis does a great job. We need to have him back on again soon, too. He said this after the ruling. He says, the activist judge let the mask slip by admitting that the ruling was about protecting the government school establishment. The judge noted that public schools lose some money whenever a child switches to a private school, but this is true whenever a parent chooses to educate their child at home or in a private school for whatever reason. Because public schools are funded based on enrollment with or without a school choice initiative in place. So what he's saying is it was a red herring argument on her point. It was a $4,300 scholarship that had 3,000 enrollees already in it, and it could be used for a variety of things to include private schools. Yeah, okay. Well, I know we're taking a break here shortly, but let me just say this. You got good things like that happening in North Dakota. Notre Dame just filed a brief in support of Kentucky's school choice, the School of Law at Notre Dame. Kansas just advanced a parent's bill of rights in March of this year. And then you've got, of course, the fact that Arizona just went whole hog, man, and said we're all in for making sure that kids have whatever it is the parents think they need. We got to do better in Alabama. I believe we can. There's some good folks down there who can make it happen. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. More to come. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Time now, 3:35 p.m. There's still plenty of time left to be solid, conservative, and just plain right. That is always the goal on this show. And, Copper, you got some nice stuff from Leanne from Huntsville a moment ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I've gotten several callers now who've been very encouraging nice. And thanked me for everything I've brought to the show, said they'd miss me. So thank you all for calling in
Absolutely.
To say that. I appreciate
well,
it.
Well, I actually just got an email, too, that came in just a moment ago. Let me go back and make sure I get the name right. Yeah, Miguel, and I don't know where Miguel's from, so I'm assuming he's in somewhere in the listening area, but he said he's sorry that you're leaving. You're a great asset and glad you're staying in the area. So
thank you, Miguel.
Yes, indeedy. All of the kudos for the copper are coming through. well earned, well deserved. Okay.
Thanks.
Hey, listen, before I go to the next part of the Triple Dipper, which is probably going to be pretty passionate for me, I'm calling it Avoiding the Hollow Military. Let me tell you, we got some, I say breaking news, it's more like important news that's happened today. So the first one is this. I mean, I got two major stories that I'm going to talk about. The first one, you know, with real sadness, what we've learned is that former Prime Minister of Japan, Shinzo Abe, was assassinated this morning. And he was considered to be a true friend and ally to the United States. He was somebody who saw eye to eye with American interests, who believed that America was an ally, that Japan benefited from that alliance, and he also believed in the strength that we could bring. This morning, now he actually, you may recall, he has I think he has ulcerative colitis, which has been something that plagued him for years. And it got so bad that a couple of years ago, he said that for his health, he was going to have to resign after having been the longest serving prime minister in Japan's modern history. But this morning, he was giving a campaign speech for the current prime minister, who is up for re-election from his own party. And in the middle of a campaign speech out on the streets, and I'm trying to think where they were. Were they in Tokyo? I don't. Anyway, he was shot by a man who actually had a homemade gun, because gun control is a big thing in Japan. They have major restrictions on gun ownership in Japan. So what did this guy do? He made his own, which there's a whole other conversation we can have about that and gun control and how criminals, they don't care. So, yeah, unfortunately, what we learned, though, is that he was shot twice with a homemade gun. The shooter was detained immediately on the spot, but he died of his wounds. I have not seen, and I'm sure it's out there by now, surely to goodness, but I have not seen an official statement from the White House. As of this morning, we already had statements in from a number of former Trump administration officials and President Trump himself, as well as other heads of state. It was a little slow on the uptick for statements coming from the White House, and I'm looking at this article right now on Fox, and I still don't see anything about that. But nonetheless, I would think by now they had. But anyway, news of the day there on the international scene: former Prime Minister of Japan, a true friend and ally to America, assassinated this morning during a campaign stop. There's that one. Total shift of gears. Here's the other one. President Biden today decided, you know what, once again, I'm going to go ahead and do whatever I feel like doing because, you know, I'm me. That's what he says. I'm putting words in his mouth, but that's the way he acts. But he went ahead and issued executive orders to protect abortion. How does he do this? Well, because first of all, his attitude, he says it during his speech today, he says that the Supreme Court's recent ruling was wrong-headed. He said, quote, here's the quote, "Let's be clear about something from the very start. This was not a decision driven by the Constitution. Let me say it again. This was not a decision driven by the Constitution. And despite what those justices, the majority, said, this was not a decision driven by history." Despite what those justices. So let me do some splaining to you, Mr. President. There are three co-equal branches of government. Each has its own role. Yours is not to determine constitutionality. Yours is to enforce the laws, Congress is to pass the laws, and the Supreme Court is to interpret the laws. Period. But he can't handle that. So he went ahead and issued an executive order. And the executive order, though, I'll be honest with you, I look at it, I'm not sure what the ins and outs are. I've got to dig in a little more, maybe do something for this on Monday. But what I'm seeing right now is it's like a nothing burger. I mean, there are some that believe that he was being pressured by his base to do something. Do something. Remember that time a few weeks ago when I had the whole segment on do something? We got to do something. What do you want to do? Something. Okay. Well, this particular executive order or series of executive orders, I don't know exactly what it's going to accomplish. Something about safeguarding access to reproductive health care services. Okay. including abortion. By the way, abortion is not reproductive health care. Abortion is ending reproduction. But anyway, and contraception. I don't really see a political movement to end contraception, so I'm not sure what the deal is. But what they're doing now is they're spoofing, they're distracting, and they're creating fear, and they're stepping in with solutions to problems that don't always exist. So they've also got something in executive order about protecting the privacy of patients. Oh, remember that thing about a week or so ago when they were saying the FBI will be able to track your movements if you go to an abortion center? They'll know. No, they're not. Maybe your cell phone, has an app on it where your husband can tell where you are, or your parents can tell where you are, or your friends can tell where you are. But the government's not seeking out your information to track you to see whether you go to an abortion clinic. Anyway, they're going to protect the privacy of patients and the access to information. Well, that's called the HIPAA laws, but okay, it already exists. Providers and clinics, and coordinates the implementation of federal efforts to protect reproductive rights and access to healthcare. Who knows what that means? It does say he's going to direct the Department of Health and Human Services to take additional action to protect and expand access to abortion care. Now, my concern on that one is they're going to do something goofy like federal lands. They'll claim an exemption and they'll start setting up abortion clinics on military installations or something like that. We'll have to wait and see. Nonetheless, because he had to do something, President Biden issued an executive order and claimed that the constitutional interpretations of the Supreme Court, whose job it is to interpret the Constitution, were unconstitutional. And he knows better, so he issued executive orders, which, in the event that they contradict the law, will be struck down, because that's happened to him multiple times. All right, plenty of stuff out there. What'd you have, Copper? You had something on the board right there?
Oh, I just said, oh, great, the executive branch is now usurping the authority of the judicial branch.
Wonderful. Ain't the first time. Yeah. That's what he did on the vaccine mandates. I remember him standing there at the microphone saying how he had been given advice by legal counsel this would probably not withstand constitutional review, but he was going to do it anyway. And he did. Huh. And he issued the vaccine mandates, which were, for the most part, struck down. So
why do we let this happen? Like, if the judicial branch suddenly decided that they were going to declare war, we would not accept it. Why do we accept when the executive branch overreaches?
I would say that we're not accepting it. He's doing it anyway. And in the event that what he does contradicts what the law is supposed to allow now, which is the legislative process to take effect, that there's going to be somebody filing suit and they'll win. I guarantee you.
Well, good. Good.
Yeah. So anyway, but the one funny thing is apparently, Biden did stand there at the teleprompter and apparently read the teleprompter and read the lines at the end of quote. That's what he's.
Oh gosh.
I'm looking at it right now. It happened today. There it is. He's looking at the teleprompter. He's reading the quote. And at the end of it, he says, end of quote. And then did he even realize what he'd done? I don't know. I'll look at it during the break and see.
His poor staff.
I mean, his communications staff, of course, his communications director is quitting. She's leaving. He just lost his press secretary and got Karine Jean-Pierre, who is now just so in over her head, she doesn't know which way is up. And it's just, anyway, things change. I mean, I get it. I shouldn't mock too much because I know that staffing changes. It's a op-tempo organization to work in the West Wing, and I am sure that there is a usual flip-flop of key personnel within a year to 2 years. But it just seems like we're seeing a lot of them lately. And I can't help but think that most folks don't want to be tied to what's going to come after the midterms. But anyway. All right, Copper, let's do this. I tell you what, that's a perfect segue, about a minute ahead of usual schedule. Let's take a break. We'll come right back from the break and jump into number two on the Triple Dipper, avoiding the hollow military. Lord, we've got to avoid that hollow military. The world's not getting any safer. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. Oh, News Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. All right, I'll listen up, all you green suitors out there at Redstone Arsenal and others in the veteran community here around the listening area. And those of you who just care about things related to national security, this next piece of the Triple Dipper, I'm calling it Avoiding the Hollow Army. Really avoiding the hollow military as a whole. I remember, and some of y'all remember, I'm sure, I remember distinctly my dad talking about what it was like serving in the post-Vietnam era, typically during the Carter years, in what he called the Hollow Army. And it was kind of depressing. It was basically a sense that we have a force structure without a force that is ready to apply force when needed. That basically we have more on paper than we can do in real life. So the hollow force, I mean, I've got, so here's the deal. Let me reach back a little bit. Let me pull this up. This is from the Heritage Organization. You've seen him on Fox News a lot, James J. Carafano. He wrote a piece in April of 2006. I'm reaching back. 2006. And the title of it was Avoiding the Hollow Force, which I thought was kind of funny because here I am literally writing a piece or doing a Triple Dipper today called Avoiding the Hollow Military. His is called Avoiding the Hollow Force, Maintaining a Trained and Ready Military. He makes the point right up front like I just did. He said, hollow force is a term that was coined in the post-Vietnam War era. It describes a military force that lacks the resources to field trained and ready forces to support ongoing operations and to modernize. This is 2006. They were holding a panel in which they invited a number of distinguished guests to include General Dennis Reimer, who was the former Army Chief of Staff. And it talks about the fact that in future contingencies, this is 2006, in future contingencies, then it was believed U.S. forces will operate more frequently outside the borders of conventional conflict, be deployed to less familiar areas. Unforeseen conditions, they say, are going to be the future. However, it goes on to talk about the fact that with operations becoming increasingly varied, military leaders had to be able to adapt and acquire new skills. But then General Reimer chimed in and offered another perspective, a unique perspective, because he had served in the last hollow force. He said that experience had shaped his thinking when he later became the Army Chief of Staff. He said, when I took over as chief in 95, the one thing that worried me most was how do you prevent the Army from becoming a hollow army? And I would have to add the word again to that. He says, Reimer is optimistic, and that was 2006, about the future of the armed forces. He said, the military is in the greatest shape ever. Here's the kicker at the very end. The United States, and this is the quote at the end of the article, 2006, the United States military cannot afford to wait until it faces a crisis to act. The panelists at that particular convention disagreed as to when the U.S. military may become hollow, but they did agree that the costs associated with preventing the problem of a hollow force are far less than the costs of resolving it. Okay, so here's the deal. We're looking at a situation right now, and I've kind of alluded to pieces of it here in the last few days, that literally what we're looking at is the worst recruiting effort since we ended the draft. What did we end the draft in, like 1972, I believe? We are right now at the worst level of recruiting since the draft was ended. We're in a place right now where too often social experimentation has become the order of the day because the military is like the liberals who are in charge right now. It's like their petri dish for social experimentation. They have a captive audience. Let's do stuff with them. What do you want to do? I don't know. Let's go ahead and make sure that they have to have transgenders in the shower with them in the barracks. You think I'm kidding? No, I've got an article right here. Exclusive from Breitbart. You ready? Dated July 7th. That's yesterday. Breitbart reports exclusive. Army training says soldiers must shower with transgender persons of opposite sex. It goes on to say they had a chance to review slides. Slides that were part of mandatory training that was presented to all soldiers in accordance with the Department of Defense orders of January 2021. And the vignette in the slide is following his transition from female to male and gender marker change in the DEERS system, a transgender soldier begins using the male barracks, bathroom, and shower facilities because he, quote unquote, I'm saying quotes, did not undergo a surgical change, the soldier still has female genitalia. The slide instructs soldiers who are watching the training then to, quote, accept living and working conditions that are often austere, primitive, and characterized by little or no privacy, and understand that anyone may encounter individuals in the barracks, bathrooms, or shower facilities with physical characteristics of the opposite sex, despite having the same gender marker endears. Actually, that's not called a man or a woman. That's called somebody who wants to be a man or a woman. So while we look at social experimentation, I have to ask you, is the U.S. military going to be ready for the next war? Well, it's a question that is weighing on the minds of experts. Let me spend a little more time walking through a piece from January of this year that was written in National Review. The title of it was, Is the U.S. Military Actually Ready for a War? It says, the U.S. faces both the immediacy of a great power competition and the prospect of a great power war. Both of these require a military that is wholly prepared for combat. This preparation includes all of the standard aspects of military power, personnel, materiel, and training. But most important and least measurable is intellectual readiness, and there is no sign that the armed services or the defense establishment more broadly are intellectually prepared for what we might refer to as a Sino-American clash. And then here's the kicker, and I agree with this. It says a military organization's first peacetime task is preparing for combat. Period. Hard stop. We're going to unpack this more. And I tell you what, let me just go ahead and grab a call from Robert from Athens real quick. Line 3, Robert from Athens, how you doing, man?
Hey, Phil, I'm a retiree from the Department of the Army out here, Redstone Arsenal. And I saw the beginning of all this, and I told every top manager I could get my hands on, I said, you do this, and the next war we go into, we lose.
That's sobering, but it's a scary thought. But the reality is they're degrading us to the point where you have to wonder.
I'm not wondering. You know, they're putting women into combat units, frontline infantry units, and it slows everybody down. Women simply don't have the strength or the power to keep up with the big boys.
Well, and then, but I think one of the other things that's very interesting, too, is the transgender piece. Hey, Robert, thanks for your service. We're on a hard break right now. I appreciate you calling in and appreciate your service, too, very much, sir. All right, folks, we're going to unpack this more when I get back. Are we ready to fight the next war? Is woke getting in the way? Do we have the recruiting necessary to man the force? What is happening? And by the way, are they aware at top leadership, or are they just blindly looking off in another direction? We'll talk about that when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned.